Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Wednesday, February 11th, welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
Prediction markets are taking off, and they're turning almost anything into a wager. Not just who wins the Super Bowl, Avi, okay?
But potatoes now.
Yeah. A play in the game, the first song in the halftime show, who will win an Oscar, whether the U.S. will take military action abroad, even what the weekend weather will look like. And the scale is staggering. Around the Super Bowl alone, prediction markets saw more than $1 billion in trading, and platforms like Kalshi and Polymarket have become the new hot thing. So today, we're going to pull back the curtain. We're going to look at how prediction markets actually worked. I learned a lot in preparing for this show. We're going to look at who's using them, who's really making money, some of the upsides, and what the risks are from manipulation and insider trading to the idea that we're turning the news itself into a casino. And we have two great guests who've been studying sports betting, and now they're studying prediction markets, and they'll give us the skinny behind it all. And we also want to hear from you because the culture is shifting. So we want to ask you, what do you think? Why do you think betting is taking off in our culture? And have you used prediction markets? If so, give us a call, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, leave your comments in the chat. And we just came off the website. All sorts of bets.
We run Kalshi before the show started.
All sorts of bets, man.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I actually wanted to read this comment at the top of the show from MJ, who's one of our frequent commenters, responding to our question for, why this is taken off. MJ says, because people don't understand statistics. People don't understand the expression, the house always wins in the long run. Mm-hmm. Interesting comment, because we'll get into it in the show, but when it comes to prediction markets, there's not a house in the traditional sense. And so that's something
you had to explain
unpack.
That to me, because we were talking about, I was like, what?
Not to say that people are going to make money or lose money on this endeavor, right? But it's a little different than traditional betting, and that.
And even sports betting.
And it's a key distinction, and it goes into how it works, but also how it's regulated.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a lot to learn this episode. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. By the way, a friend of mine texted me this morning and said, just heard your promo about prediction market episode. I just want to check. Are you planning to say the words corrupt, insider, or unbelievable?
Because they're probably waging a bet. Who knows?
We are not on prediction markets yet.
But we're going to keep working, because you never know.
Trio of local news stories to start us off here. And this is one that you heard in our national newscast. A grand jury in Washington, D.C. has rebuffed a Justice Department attempt to indict six Democratic lawmakers, including local Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan. As you heard, Houlihan and five other members of Congress, all of them veterans, made a video in the fall reminding U.S. military members they have a constitutional obligation to refuse illegal orders. This enraged President Trump, who posted on social media that it was seditious behavior punishable by death. The Justice Department asked a grand jury to indict these lawmakers, and the grand jury said no thanks, meaning no trial. Houlihan, who represents parts of Chester and Berks County, said on X, quote, this is good news for the Constitution and free speech protections it guarantees. The grand jury upheld the rule of law. This is a win for all Americans.
Yeah. I will say the claims against the members of Congress were specious, and the New York Times article that we cited here points that out. And the Justice Department under Mr. Trump, they report has brought questionable criminal cases against foes of the president. And we've kind of seen that happen, among them James Comey, the former FBI director, Letitia James, New York's attorney general. And the cases, a lot of them, if you're a lawyer, people watching this, you say, okay, these cases are pretty weak, but the DOJ brings them anyway and lets the court swat them.
And it's a stress test for the judicial system. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting here is that grand juries, which we've noted, right? Like they typically at least approve the indictment. That doesn't mean the person's guilty. They just approve the indictment. But we're starting to see more and more cases where they're saying, we won't even do that.
Yeah, let's not even do it.
Which is a fascinating trend to follow.
Yeah, so interesting. And we'll be watching them, because I'm sure there may be even more cases. We'll see. Second story, city officials awarded $6 million in funding to help grow an anti-violence nonprofit, but that group has imploded. That's according to a report by the Philadelphia Inquirer that looked into the funding of a group called New Options, New Opportunities. If you've heard of them, it's called NOMO Foundation. That's their shorthand. And you may have seen their headquarters on Broad Street in the past. Well, the city awarded NOMO anti-violence grants and locally administered federal funds, including a $1 million grant back in 2021, $700,000 grant last year to expand youth programs and to launch a new housing program. But the Inky reports that NOMO overextended itself. It took on expenses it could not afford. It got hit with multiple eviction filings, an IRS tax lien, had to lay off staff and suspend programs. And last year, the group had to end its housing initiative and displace 23 low-income tenants. And the Inquirer used the Right to Know law. They got records and reports show that city officials had expressed concerns about NOMO, their lack of finance controls, and their inability to produce certain documentation going as far back as 2021. And yet they kept getting funding, most likely due to political connections.
Well, that's the question. Was it because of that? You know, or was it, you know, because here's where I struggle with the story, because there were some questionable expenses that the Inquirer uncovered, but it wasn't a case like we've seen cases before where some organization or some person gets money and they're spending it willy nilly and all sorts of lavish things that have nothing to do with programming. Mm-hmm. There was a little bit of that in this case, but not a ton.
Yeah.
It seems like genuinely what happened is that they got a lot of money and they didn't have the capacity to expand that quickly. Mm-hmm. Well, back when all of this money, this anti-violence money, was being distributed by the city, the refrain that I heard over and over again was it needs to go to the grassroots and it needs to get there quickly.
And they didn't have the structure.
But that was by design. People told us that's how the programs should work. And so is this a case of that was the wrong approach? Was this just the wrong organization? Those are the questions that are floating around in my mind. Obviously, if there's political connections at play, then maybe that answers the question for this particular case. But it also felt to me a little bit like this was the program that was set up on some level.
Yeah. And I mean, I've seen, this organization do work. It's not like they're questioning whether or not they were actually doing good work with young people and everything like that. I will say founder Ricky Duncan blamed payment delays for the implosion. He told the Inquirer that we built a tab that was so big we couldn't pay anymore because the city didn't pay. And people had complained that the city had sort of was slow to pay out this funding. But I'll also say this. I mean, I covered nonviolence, efforts, as a reporter for years. And there are a lot of groups doing a lot of great work, a lot of them doing it for very little money. Right. And then a lot of them may not have had the sort of structure that you need to bring in millions and millions of dollars.
Now, can you drop $1 million into the lap of an organization like that? And what do you expect to happen?
Yeah. And so sometimes you may need to provide structural supports for nonprofits that are not used to this. And you wonder if the city could have done more to sort of get these organizations ready. And hopefully this won't.
But at the time, everyone was like, you got to go now.
Got to go now.
Speed. This is a triage situation. We have hundreds of people dying. I think it's a dilemma on many levels.
Yeah, tough call.
Story number three. Folks, the Eagles might not be Super Bowl champions anymore, but by one measure, they're still on top.
Okay.
According to the official Nielsen ratings, last year's Super Bowl is still the most watched of all time.
Yeah, go Birds.
There it is.
You knew I was going to say it.
This year's game drew, on average, about 3 million fewer viewers than last year's, 124 down from 127 million. It's a bit of an upset, by the way, because since 2021, Super Bowl viewership had gone up year over year. So that begs the question, why was Super Bowl viewership down this year versus the Eagles-Chiefs game last year?
Well, I will say I tried to watch the game, and I looked up, and it was only 3 points on the board. We're going into second quarter. And I was just like, this game is boring. There was only 9 points before halftime, and it's just
you're saying the game stunk.
The game was boring. Yes, it was a snoozer. And I'll also say people, the teams, right? People kind of hate on the Patriots because they always win.
Right, right.
And I don't know if people really know the Seahawks like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say, was there a quarterback in this year's game as good looking as Jalen Hurts?
I don't think so.
Was there a running back as explosive and charismatic as Saquon Barkley?
Definitely not.
Was there a tight end dating a Pennsylvania-born pop superstar?
No.
I mean, so, at the end of the day.
Because the Swifties probably did help out.
At the end of the day, Eagles-Chiefs just had more juice. And I think, personal opinion, the Eagles should still be considered the rightful champions of the National Football League. I rest my case.
Yes. I you know what? I agree.
Go Birds.
Go Birds. That's right. That's one argument I can agree with. So
we're going to argue about predictions markets on the other side of this break. They're taking off. You can bet on all sorts of crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good idea? 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back after this.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. I'll bet you've heard about prediction markets, platforms like Polymarket and Kalshi that allow people to place wagers or trades on just about anything, a micro play in a football game, an Oscar award winner, the weekend weather, or the unemployment numbers in today's jobs report.
Prediction markets have exploded in popularity recently. They had a huge win with the Super Bowl with over $1 billion in trades around the game. Proponents of these platforms say they are accurate and useful forecasting tools because they rely on the wisdom of crowds who have money on the line. But with recent scandals around insider trading, how do bettors know the action isn't rigged?
Today, we're going to dig into how prediction markets work, who's using them, and the real risks and rewards beneath the hype. We'll also look at how betting has so quickly seeped into everyday life. To talk about all of this, we have two reporters who followed the rise of prediction markets. Bobby Allen is the NPR technology reporter. Bobby, welcome back to Studio 2. He's on mute. We'll get him back.
Yeah.
We'll also introduce Danny Funt, a reporter and the author of the new book, Everybody Loses, The Tumultuous Rise of American Sports Gambling. Hey, Danny, welcome to the program.
Hey, good to be here.
And we want to hear from you, our listeners, this hour. Our question of the day is, why do you think betting is taking off in our culture? And have you used a prediction market? If you did, give us a call, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat, and I can hear Bobby there.
Bobby, you're there.
We're glad you're there.
We love you, Bobby.
Yeah.
Hey, Jerry and Avi. How's
hey,
it going, guys?
And we're giving
you
the first question, too, just to keep it hot. I have heard from many people that these prediction markets are fundamentally different than more typical styles of betting, let's say sports betting. So, how are they different? Mm-hmm. And how does that change the way they're regulated, Bobby?
So I think one of the main ways they're different is it's not exactly a traditional house like you would see, like you were describing at the top. Instead, it's traders, you know, betting against other traders. And so the platforms here, so Kalshi and Polymarket, they're the two big ones. They are extracting profits by taking a fee on every single trade. So they have an incentive for volume here, as opposed to sort of traditional gambling where, you know, the house wins when the bettor loses. Now there's a number of lawsuits that are pending against Kalshi that say this whole there's no house thing is really hogwash. And a number of lawyers say if you really apply scrutiny to how these prediction market platforms work, you see that they have, like Kalshi, for instance, has a separate entity that is putting up money mm-hmm. on the opposite side of bets and has access to data that the typical retail trader doesn't. So the odds might not be as great in your favor as you might think, but it's still different than a typical house. But yeah.
Yeah, so just to give people some background here, MGM might say the Eagles are favored to win the game by at least 3.5 points. And they're the ones making that call. On a market like Polymarket, if you're betting on the outcome of an Eagles game, you would buy, yes, the Eagles are going to win, or no, the Eagles are going to win. And the price of those, you know, various bets is set by the number of other people who are voting yes or no. Am I in the ballpark here, Bob?
Exactly. That's exactly right. They're binary contracts. Yes, this will happen. No, this will happen. They're worth either $0 or $1 when they pay out. And yes, the betting lines and the probabilities are set by what traders like you and I and everyone else are saying. Yes.
So I'm
putting their money where their mouth is, right?
Right, yeah. Right.
So I'm on the Kalshi website right now, Danny, and, you know, I'm looking at a question. It says, government shutdown on Saturday, ? You can say yes for 83 cents or no for 18 cents. Give us a sense of who's creating.
Which, wait, real quick. So that means no is way less likely to happen,
is way less likely to happen than yes, which is.
Oh, but did I get that backwards? So it was 83 cents?
No, yes is more likely to happen because it's.
Got it.
Yeah, yeah. So, Danny, who comes up with these questions, right? I want you to kind of explain to me, like, who's coming up with these questions and what are the types of things that you're seeing people able to bet on? Because I'm seeing all kinds of stuff from the Olympics to, I mean, you can bet on almost anything. So who puts these questions in? I'm just wondering.
Right. They're all generated by the platform, in that case, Kalshi, and they all have to be approved by the CFTC, every single market you're trading on. There is a slight wrinkle to that where a lot of these platforms have recently struck partnerships with news organizations like CNBC and CNN. And in some of those announcements, they said the news organization could pitch markets that they'd like to see people able to bet on. So maybe they'll take some feedback from journalists and their employers. But one of the most interesting facets of this is they really push the boundaries on what you're able to bet on. Mm-hmm. A huge share of their betting volume for now is sports. In a lot of ways, that's basically indistinguishable from traditional sports gambling, aside from how these odds are presented. But they'll take bets on the weather, on natural disasters, on all sorts of things in politics. Some very frivolous stuff. I heard you joke about what are called mention markets, which is, let's say someone's going on a talk show. Will they say a specific word? And that can be very messy to actually officiate whether, you know, that word was said or not. But also some pretty provocative stuff, like Polymarket is taking bets on whether the mother of Savannah Guthrie, the Today Show host, will be the suspect in that case, will be arrested by a given date. They seem much more aggressive or brazen in some of the things they offer. They also had a similar market about whether a shooter at Brown University would be caught within a certain time frame.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's pretty wild.
It's wild. I mean, one question, how high will unemployment get in 2026? And one of the things that came to my mind is the fact that, you know, if you bet on a sports game, you know the outcome pretty quickly. But with some of these questions and these prediction markets, you put your money in and you could be waiting months, if not a year, for the actual outcome. How does that sort of, I want your reaction to that, Danny, a little bit, because that does change. I mean, are they making money off the interest? Like, and I just wonder how the money goes, because your money could be sitting in on this bet for an undetermined amount of time. Yes?
Yeah, it is funny. If you've ever been to a sports book, a physical location, let's say you're watching the Super Bowl, as soon as the game is over, there's a long line at the counter of people betting on who will win next year's Super Bowl. So there are some pretty long-term bets with sports betting too. But typically these markets they definitely have a fixed time frame. Like this will be determined by X date at the latest. It's rarely that long, but sometimes the length that you're waiting for the bet to resolve can be strange, as can just determining the outcome of the bet. So
I was just going to ask about that, Danny. Like, who makes the call about whether a word was said? Maybe someone starts to say a word and they don't finish saying that word. We talked a lot about we were talking before the show about this market, about what would be the first song that Bad Bunny played at the Super Bowl halftime show. And what you consider the first true song might really be a judgment call. So just, I assume that Kalshi and Polymarket just get to make the determination, Danny?
No, and you're right. That could be messy. Like if you play the music for 10 seconds of one song and then you jump into the lyrics of another, who could say? They'll always stipulate the source of truth. It's often a news organization. Got you know, it. If the New York Times reports it or NPR, that's the basis. But it can get weird. Like there's one on Kalshi that's, will the U.S. government confirm the existence of extraterrestrial life by the end of next year? And I was wondering, you know, gosh, who's actually gets to call that one? And it's the White House. So if the White House says they've found aliens, then the people who bet on
Got
that
it.
win.
But
But
that's all written
maybe,
into the contract up front. That's part of Kalshi. Bobby, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say there's a number of markets that have really debatable resolutions and create like super heated discussions where all these traders are sharing tips like on Discord and on Reddit. I was watching one recently where there was a mention market over whether executives would use the word security in a Bank of America earnings call. And it got to the very end, and it seemed like nobody was going to say the word security until an analyst came on and introduced himself as, "Hi, I'm so and so from Bank of America Securities." And because the contract said it's the word or the plural of the word, it caused this huge debate. Does that count? Does it not count? And ultimately, in situations like that, it's like the Supreme Court of Cauchy, right? It's like staff members will put TBD on the resolution days later. It either pays out or doesn't pay out. And sometimes they split the difference. There was another huge debate recently with the Super Bowl around the question of whether Cardi B is performing or not. And she was sort of a cameo dancer in the background, but did that count as a performance? And
Performance,
they sort of split the difference. But a lot of these deliberations are not happening in public. They're happening inside the companies. And meanwhile, traders are like losing their minds on the internet. You know, there's a whole bunch of lingo when you get into these worlds. It's really hard to sort of navigate. And one of the rules, one of the words I found very entertaining is being a rules cuck. And that's someone who reads the contract rules very literally and tries to use them against everyone else to get an advantage.
Oh.
So,
So
and so, yeah,
they
if you're a serious Polymarket or Kalshi trader, you're on Discord and Reddit all day sharing tips. You know, watching news conferences, like, you know, it's and these guys are like popping Zins, they're taking caffeine pills, they're chugging Monster energy drinks,
Oh
they're
my
working 15,
goodness.
16-hour days. It's quite an interesting group of like renegade kids, and
And
they're mostly young and they're mostly male.
they're making some serious money, Bobby. I saw some reporting that you did that they're clearing tens of thousands of dollars per month doing these prediction markets. How are you able to make that kind of money? And give me some range. I mean, I would think people would start losing their shirts, or they get it right, they get it wrong, but people are really making a living doing this.
Yeah, I would say some people make a lot of money, most people lose money.
Okay.
If you
Like
you're on
most
these
betting.
apps long enough, you can click on their profiles, and most people put their P&L, their profits and losses, right there publicly on their profile next to their avatar. And most people you click on have lost money and are chasing their losses. But if you get really good at these, and if you get what they call alpha, like having a kind of edge on everyone else, you can make a lot of money. I just talked to a trader yesterday who ordered a physical terrestrial antenna before the Super Bowl game to try to have like a half a millisecond of an advantage on the live game. You know, he said he was betting on whether Timothy Chalamet would go to the Super Bowl. So he tried to look up a public schedule for him and saw that, oh, he's speaking at a movie theater in Los Angeles. He called the movie theater. They confirmed Chalamet would be there. So he put lots of money on the no, right? I mean, none of this is illegal. It's all
Yeah.
information that anyone can get by using a phone or an advantage you could get by getting an
But
antenna.
more to the
But
point,
to answer your,
Bobby, but more to the point, Bobby, that's how stock trading has always worked. There are these people out there who
Who
are
pay
looking for an
attention.
edge. They're looking for some bit of information that people aren't seeing, and then they're trying to identify markets where there's some sort of weakness, there's some sort of structural overbet or underbet. So I guess the question beyond that then, Bobby, is any of that problematic, or is this just an expanded version of what the stock market's always been?
Well, this is a very different universe of gambling because of the kinds of markets that exist, right? These markets invite all sorts of cheating and all sorts of, you know, insider bets because of the very nature of what people are betting on. For instance, I mean, there's so many mention markets just today on corporate earnings calls. I mean, a lot of these remarks are prepared ahead of time. What if somebody whispers to an executive, "Why don't you say this word? I'll put $100,000 on it." Same thing goes for live performances. Same things goes for any kind of event in which somebody is speaking. I mean, there's often betting on what people will say at a late night appearance, and those are typically
Yeah.
pre-taped.
Right.
So there's a whole group of audience members who can bet and make money and really undermine the integrity of these markets. So that's, I think, a big way in
Difference.
which they are different than stock markets, right?
Yep.
And then there's another layer of that, which is there's basically no cop on the beat, and we could get into that, but there's very few regulations and rules around these prediction markets.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, Danny. Like, you know, I think about and some of the work that you've done talks about how sports betting has this dark side that nobody really thinks about. And just hearing Bobby like sort of fire off all the things that could go wrong, all the cheating that could happen, could you are there some similarities? Are there some places where you could see there could be some dark side to this these prediction markets?
Absolutely. I mean, the first one my mind goes to is just the public health consequences. Like, so much of this just seems like fodder to feed an insatiable appetite for
Yep.
gambling. You know, the initial argument was that there would be some economic value to these markets. That's why they're regulated at the federal level by the CFTC. It's noteworthy that Kalshi is the number one finance app, not gambling app. But clearly, like, what economic value is there in whether Bad Bunny will start the Super Bowl halftime show with a given song, or we could go down the list of things we've been talking about. That to me is worrisome. And then you add on the layer that the age to participate is 18 and up. In Pennsylvania and most states, the age to bet on sports is 21 and up. It's a long list, and it's strange because we end up making it sound like sports betting is so rigorously regulated and abiding by these stringent consumer protections. It's absolutely not, and I get into that a lot in my reporting. But by comparison, it's very flattering for those companies because this is the Wild West.
It is the Wild West.
We're
That's what
asking
it
you this
feels like.
hour, why do you think betting is taking off in our culture? Have you used a prediction market? 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org. Lots of comments online. Yelena on YouTube says, thanks to smartphones, susceptible people who might never have gone to a casino or met a bookie are exposed to the opportunity. Sin Madre says anything immoral is growing. And Gregory says, I'm not sure that it's growing. It's simply universally legalized now. Let me read this. Here's a good one from Carl, by the way. Why are you wasting time and energy on such a low quality, uninteresting topic? If you're going to waste time on this topic, at least talk about the amount of energy and resources wasted so that people can bet on nonsense. Are we all just addicted to tech at this point in history? Well, Carl, I would say if we're all just addicted to tech at this point in history and it's a drain on our natural resources, it might be worth talking about. That would be my rebuttal to Carl. But Danny, let's go back to the insider trading thing. What Kalshi and the other markets would say is that if you do insider trading, it's illegal and you could be criminally charged. We'll catch you. You will not make any money off of it, and you will be liable. Why isn't that, you know, a satisfying explanation for why insider trading would not take off or would not be rampant in these markets?
I'd say two reasons. One, that might be the rule, but it's borderline unenforceable. There's just way too much ground to cover and way too many examples of suspicious types of trading that could be the result of insider trading. But I just know it, no one who follows this closely seems to think Kalshi or federal regulators have the manpower or even the interest to be investigating all of that.
Well, their interest, Danny, would be that they want the other retail traders to have a fair shot. And they need those people on the markets, right? Because we've already established volume of bet equals profit. So if people don't trust the markets anymore, the volume will go down. So that I think they would say that's their incentive, right?
They would, but the other thing that they really emphasize is branding this as a source of truth. And that's why they want news organizations to be covering it, because these probabilities tend to be very predictive for that wisdom of crowds phenomenon you mentioned. So the insider trading is a great boost to it being a source of truth. Like, you know, if we want to know the probability, I'd love to know what people with inside access to non-public information are betting. So it's an asset from that angle.
So let's say there was a prediction market about who's going to win a contested election. Mm-hmm. And someone who wanted a candidate to win could go in and throw like $1 million on their candidate.
Maybe even a country.
Yeah, move the market in that direction. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? That person gets coverage for their quote unquote odds going up. Voters see that and then think this person's got momentum. Is that a real problem here?
Yeah, and then more campaign donations as their campaign appears to be generating momentum. That's been documented to happen overseas for sure, and even in the U.S. A few presidential cycles ago. That sort of market manipulation has such an obvious appeal to campaigns and their supporters. I don't know how you'd stop that either. You might say the candidate can't wager, but there was a person running for governor in California this past election who posted, hey, I just bet, I think it was $1,000 or something, on myself to win on Kalshi, and he was able to place that bet, evidently, and Kalshi never clarified what they did from an enforcement standpoint after that. So the list goes on and on. This is such a strange territory, and it seems so untenable on all these different topics.
Yeah, and Danny, I do want to get your thoughts on that. The news organizations actually using these markets, the actual bet and where people land, whether it be yes or no, as polling. Because, you know, I just feel like it, news sort of getting in bed with this. I mean, I don't know. It raises all sorts of ethical questions in my mind.
It does. Just to rattle off a few, just the promoting gambling piece, when a lot of these companies have been highlighting all the dangers involved and the growing crisis that seems to be brewing with so much gambling in the country. Also, these feedback loops, as scholars describe it, where you're covering prediction markets and that tends to generate a lot of trading, and then the numbers change and then people react to the numbers. I think of it with the bets on who will be the first cabinet secretary in this administration to go. You could imagine if there's a lot of coverage that, let's say, Pete Hegseth's odds are surging and President Trump watches a lot of news, he might say, I'm sick of hearing about this, I'm going to go ahead and fire Hegseth. And in that way, kind of the coverage is affecting the outcome of those bets. And the third is just what we've seen in sports media, and I've reported on this extensively, is these partnerships have a chilling effect on journalists' willingness to report things that are embarrassing for a big sponsor. So it was gambling, you know, you might not cover a match-fixing scandal in sports because it's a bad look for one of your big advertisers. I could imagine the same thing happening where maybe people at places like CNN or CNBC or the Wall Street Journal or whoever signs one of these deals says, maybe I'm not going to go hard in investigating Kalshi or Polymarket because we have this very high-profile partnership with them.
Yeah, and then news organizations kind of need the money because the old, you know, advertiser model, the reliance on the advertisers is no longer working, and it seems like some of these organizations are trying it out.
Yeah, and it could supercharge their viewership. Just like with sports, you know, that was a big argument. Gamblers yep. watch way more games than normal fans. As Bobby was describing, it seems like traders are just rabidly consuming anything they can get their hands on. So that's great for clicks and viewership, at least in the short term.
Yeah, everyone doing all that research means eyeballs on your
news,
channel
yeah.
or clicks on your website. We're going to keep the conversation going. We're asking you, why do you think gambling like this has really taken off so rapidly? Carl doesn't think it's interesting. I do think it's interesting that billions of dollars are being traded on questions like this all over the country. Mr. Harold Williams Jr. on YouTube says, this is too much, too much. We all need to go to therapy. Mm. Don't go anywhere.
Maybe.
Stay here on Studio 2 for at least the next 40 minutes. We'll be right back.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. This hour, we're talking about the boom in prediction markets. From sports to politics to ordinary things like the weather, people can place bets on all sorts of outcomes on platforms like Kalshi and Polymarket. So what's behind the explosion in this kind of betting? Is there enough transparency? With us, we have Danny Funt, reporter and author of Everybody Loses, The Tumultuous Rise of American Sports Gambling. And we also have Bobby Allen, NPR correspondent, who's been covering prediction markets.
And we're asking you the following this hour. Why do you think betting is taking off in our culture? Have you used a prediction market? Call 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. Michael says, it's taken off because of the allure of getting rich fast.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Danny, I do wonder the why now question. So what has sort of shifted, do you think, right now? We know, I remember 2018 when sports betting sort of came online. What do you think makes now the reason why this boom is sort of happening when it comes to prediction markets?
The simplest answer is just a much more lenient regulatory posture. And a big part of that is the Trump administration is a friend to these companies. Donald Trump Jr., the president's son, is an advisor to both Kalshi and Polymarket. There's talk of Truth Social, the president's social media platform, launching its own prediction market. They're also fond of crypto, and the crypto business is very integrated with prediction markets. So there's that. But also, I think a broader trend of kind of a get-rich-quick desperation among a lot of people. And also, whether that's something that's strictly gambling, like the explosion of online casino gambling, or things that have a veneer of a kind of financial product, whether that's retail trading on Robinhood or another platform like that. It's noteworthy that Robinhood has a partnership with Kalshi and is looking to launch its own prediction market. So there's clear overlap there. But people who like the idea of bet a little, win a lot, is just a huge growth sector in the gambling business.
Wow. Susie says, I don't understand why something as addicting as gambling has so many commercials on television. Cigarette commercials have been banned. Can't see folks drinking on beer commercials, but every other commercial all day is for gambling. Maybe that's the difference. Bobby, we have Bobby Allen back, and I'm curious actually about whether there is a huge opportunity for all this type of betting, wagering, predictions, market stuff that the companies claim. Because at the end of the day, from the data I've seen, still something like 90% of this is just sports gambling by another name. All these other types of questions and predictions markets that we've talked about, is there actually a future in that financially for these companies, or is it just hype?
I mean, future financially, they're making hand over fist profits. There's no doubt about that. I mean, and remember, these futures contracts were kind of like a niche type of market until very, very recently. Like the CFTC, which regulates them, used to see like companies list like a handful of markets a year for things like soybeans and crude oil futures. And I just checked, and Kalshi alone has like 270,000 active markets. And remember, as you mentioned, Avi, they're making money on every trade. So that is a lot of, right? So yeah, but sports is the number one thing that people are betting on here. But these other areas, politics, culture, mentioned markets, and the rest, are increasingly drawing people in. So as long as regulators are going to kind of look the other way and give carte blanche to these companies, I think their growth is only going to be exponential. And yes, in theory, the CFTC is supposed to be approving all these markets. But the way it's practically working now is they're often self-certified. So they'll say, this market is much like a market we had in the past, and it goes live without any real regulatory approval. So it's just really staggering and really amazing, really, the degree to which they're really, as I've been mentioning, there are very few guardrails on this industry.
Yeah. And I just wonder, Bobby, because you're saying that, you know, it's like a free for all. And Danny was talking about this Wild Wild West thing. But the states are sort of pushing back. You got tribes, you got the gambling industry, sports betting industry, they're pushing back. What kind of questions are you seeing sort of swirl up in some of these court cases? Because there's quite a few sort of out there. And do you see, you know, you predict an outcome where there's some pushback on this growing market, this growing predictions market?
Yeah, there's like about 24 federal cases pending involving Cauchy, and they're basically all dealing with this question of whether states, so state gambling commissions, or the federal government has jurisdiction over this industry. And you have, as you mentioned, you have a number of states, you have tribes who say these are nothing more than unlicensed sports gambling operations that are avoiding all sorts of rules and regulations, with which Danny says, you know, might not be, you know, that rigorous, but it's more than what the prediction market industry has right now. And I think what is likely going to happen is, according to a bunch of legal analysts, is there could be sort of a split among federal appeals courts, and this could eventually, you know, go to the Supreme Court, which could settle the sort of very murky sort of legal landscape for these prediction markets. But right now they're being contested nationwide. And look at sports, is the number one thing that states are interested in here because of the tax revenue. Because prediction markets are sort of avoiding state gambling commissions, they're not generating tax for state coffers. And that's one of the things I think is really motivating authorities to go after this industry, that they're not only avoiding state rules, but they're not generating money that is, you know, tends to be a reliable source of revenue for lots of states.
Yeah, a state like Pennsylvania brings in about $1 billion from these types of taxes. It's a big deal. Mm-hmm. Mike from Germantown says, gambling is baked into our human nature. The industry is just taking advantage of it. Garden with a similar comment, it's always been woven into our culture, from playing the numbers to selling chances for baskets, money pools, trips to Disney to raise money for schools, sports, and field trips.
Mm-hmm.
So, Danny, I wanted to ask you, like, is there a way to do this in a responsible way? Is there a regulatory framework you could set up where you could have predictions markets, you could have some of these non-sports questions, political questions, questions about news events, and the markets could be fair and you could protect consumers? Or is this just like the nature of the questions they're asking makes it so these markets can never work in a truly fair way? Your take, Danny.
I think you could make it incrementally better. You know, one funny example of the difference between sports books and prediction markets and the rules they have to follow, you don't see at the end of a prediction market commercial, you know, the problem gambling hotline come up as sports books are required to advertise. It'd be pretty ironic, since their whole case is this isn't gambling, to then have to say gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. But it seems like they're serving the same customer base. Yeah, you know, there actually was a really strong argument for prediction markets in a kind of academic context before this all exploded. A lot of scholars said it's interesting to have people more engaged than they would have been otherwise in politics. The probabilities that it generates can be so valuable, especially as we lose faith in polls. It can even help combat misinformation in interesting ways, where if you're winning money, you might then have an epiphany about something that just rhetoric doesn't register. So all of that is kind of a value to this that I think maybe is worth tapping into.
Well, here's my follow-up, yeah. Danny. Why not, I don't know how you would codify this, but could you make some sort of rule where you say, look, we're going to have predictions markets, but we're only going to have predictions markets based on questions that no individual or very small group of people have control of the outcome over? So an election is a good example of that, right? Like, at the end of the day, no one truly knows what's going to happen. Bad Bunny set list, an example of the opposite. I just feel like somehow, maybe categorically, you could separate those two things. You could make this work better, and you could at least assuage the fears about the insider information, insider trading. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that sounds sensible. Like, it makes me think, you know, there's always talk at the Super Bowl of people betting on what color Gatorade will be dumped on the winning coach, or what, how long will the national anthem take. You actually can't bet on those things in most states for that very reason, because one or a handful of people are controlling the outcome. It's not an unknown heading in. So yeah, again, if they had to abide by the rules that sports books have to follow, even if it's on categories beyond sports, that seems pretty sensible.
Yeah. David,
Yeah, but I'll
oh,
jump.
go right
Oh,
ahead.
go ahead.
Go ahead, Bobby.
Oh, I was just going to say on the elections and politics, going off what you were saying, Avi, I mean, one big concern, especially that these companies have partnerships with news organizations, is that some deep-pocketed donor could artificially inflate someone's odds, right? And that not only creates like momentum and news coverage, but the whole like perception becomes reality thing, I think, is a big concern. That if you pump up a candidate's odds enough, maybe that will result in people changing their votes. So it's like the integrity issues around elections are just sundry, right?
Absolutely.
And David Began on YouTube says betting nationwide is out of control. The guy that ran on the field during the Super Bowl actually predicted in a prediction market that a person would run onto the field during the Super Bowl. I don't really know if that's true,
But also, wouldn't
but
they just then ding that guy for insider trading? Like, that seems like one that would be prosecutable. Maybe I'm wrong. I
but
don't
it's like,
know.
how do you know this guy? Like, how do you my whole thing, my whole
How do you
question
know
goes,
he placed the
he
bet?
did it because you can change the names on the accounts.
Right.
It's all kinds of questions. But I wanted to sort of talk about people's changed behavior because of this. Because, you know, Danny, you kind of reported that, you know, the way people watch sports kind of shifted once sports betting came into play. Their reaction to athletes changed. And I wonder if you see any of that could possibly happen in prediction markets. The way people watch, the way they react, the way they treat people who are part of these bets, would that shift?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine politics, for example, getting any more cynical or kind of at an even higher boiling point than it is already. But that's what people like Senator Elizabeth Warren argue if we expand betting on elections to that level. Man, I don't know. It's definitely had a profound effect on sports of people were more worried about their bets than the game, just from a fan's perspective. The violence and the nonstop harassment of athletes is so out of control now as a result
I
of
was shocked to hear
gambling
that. Yeah.
legalization. Yeah. So if that happens to not just elections, but I mean, think of the people who are now the subjects of bets who aren't even in public life and how, you know, weathermen, you name it. Like, that's such a strange dynamic to suddenly incorporate all across the board.
Bobby.
And when you talk to some, I was just going to say, Avi, when you talk to some of these diehard traders, many of them want insider trading, strangely enough, right? They see it as sort of a signal that they can trail. And in fact, there's bots set up now to spot anomalous bets that maybe look insidered, as they say, and the bots will automatically follow that with more money. So if you're a trader just trying to make, you know, the most money and find the most edge, there's an argument to be made among some of these traders that insider trading sort of
Right, exactly.
propels
Because
their
if
profits.
I see $1 million come in heavy on the no question, I'll go, wait a second, what just happened there? Someone must know that no's not going to happen. Let me make some no bets. Now, the same, we're talking about automation
But is
and.
that a sign of, is that a sign of, yeah. I was going to say, is that a sign of Intel, or is it like a, as they call it, degenerate trader who's just this like edge sword chaos agent? You never know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then I guess the argument back is, well, you make a bet on it, and that's how these things work. Do you think it's someone acting like inside information, or is it someone just trying to mess with you and mess with the markets? And your job as the trader is to figure out which is which. I mean, I do think we have to talk real quickly as we wrap up, Danny, about the human side of this, which is who is drawn to this type of betting, and how is it affecting them financially and psychologically? Now, most of the evidence at this point is probably going to come from standard sports betting, but I'm imagining it's applicable more widely. Your thoughts on who's drawn to this and what it's doing to them.
It's mainly young men, at least with sports betting, and there's pretty compelling studies already comparing states with legal sports betting to those that have yet to authorize bookmaking, and you see clearly, bankruptcies go up, credit scores go down, household savings go down, even domestic violence goes up in places where sports betting is legal. Now, prediction markets are operating in all 50 states in sports and everything else. So, unless they fail in these federal court cases, those questions are kind of going to be moot because this will be a truly nationwide phenomenon.
And Bobby, I wanted to ask you as we close out as well. You talked about the traders who have try to set up these automated systems to figure out what's going on with the markets and to act quickly. Now, Cauchy will also say we have automated systems to catch, to detect weird trading for a lot of money coming in real heavy on one side or the other. Do we know whether those systems work?
They love touting what they call know your customer sort of methods they have of validating who the traders are. They say they have all sorts of surveillance tools internally using AI and other technology to try to figure out who the insiders are. But we haven't seen any public referrals to law enforcement agencies, and they say they don't talk publicly about any of their investigations. So as far as we know, they haven't really done anything. They say they're doing a lot, but analysts and experts who really study this industry, as Danny said earlier, have very little faith that these companies alone have the capacity and wherewithal to counter insider trading. It's one person said it was like laughable that they would ever muscle, you know, have the real muscle and sort of resources to be able to combat this.
Yep.
So
So the evidence is thin. I want to thank you, Bobby Allen, NPR correspondent, who's been covering prediction markets, for sticking with us this hour through some technical difficulties. Kind of ironic for a tech correspondent, I suppose. Our bad, Bobby, but we'd love to have you back. And Danny Font, reporter and author of Everybody Loses, The Tumultuous Rise of American Sports Gambling. Thank you as well, Danny. Hey, even thank you, Carl, for sticking with us on a topic you didn't like.
I
hope you learned something, Carl, and everybody else listening.
I've been talking to Carl today.
Carl.
Carl.
You're welcome anytime, man. I love Carl.
Yes, that's right. And so, got to say, some people we also love, our producers, who do a lot of work for this show. Thank you so much to Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel May Bryan. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. Got to shout out Valentine, who said betting has always been in the world since the days of Ben-Hur. Today's betting services are now legalized compared to organized crime back in the day. So from Studio 2 here at WHYY, I'm Cherry Craig.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron. Thanks for joining us.